Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Don't you like your Sundays? Because it is Sunday morning wake-up call. That's because that's the place to be. It is especially when David Toscana is in the studio with us. Good morning, David.
It's great to be here, Rick. Good morning to you.
Well, I thank you so much for being here. As you said earlier today, it is the yearly appearance here on the weekly show.
That's right. SNL does weekly update. We do yearly update.
And it's an important thing to do because otherwise I'd have to read the paper.
That's a terrible thing to have to do.
Well, you know, it's not the same anymore because you have other people outside of the area printing that.
That's right.
I can't make you speak badly about weekly papers. But Delegate David Toscano here in the studio, 57th District, which includes the city of Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County, your seventh term.
That's right.
14 years.
14 years, right.
The House Democratic leader since 2011. What's that like?
7 years. It's been the greatest job of my career, and it's also been the most challenging role of my career.
So what does that do? Tell me a little bit about, you know, what are some of the tasks? It sounds like, you know, I get this impression of the wrangler, you know, the guy who's like, getting all the dog, the Australian Wrangler dog that has to go hound everybody together and make sure everybody's following the same path.
Well, you know, there is some element to that. I mean, the Democratic leader is the face of the Democratic caucus of the House. The leader projects the outside to the outside world what the Democratic ideals are and what we're trying to get done in the House. At the same time, the Democratic leader has to run the floor during the sessions and has to watch out for all of the members of the Democratic caucus, bringing them together on a wide variety of issues that are important to our constituency to get done. So there is a lot involves a lot of strategic maneuvering that occurs that the leader has to be in the middle of. And I've really enjoyed that. You know, I think many of you know that I'm going to step down as leader at the end of this year, not stepping down as delegate, but it just takes so much time. And it's time I need to spend a lot more time with my family and a little more time with my law firm so I can make a living.
But this is just in time, just before the possibility of the Democrats taking over the House. I mean, that's what many people are expecting in the 2019 election, is that because right now it's 51-49 Republicans in
yes.
lead, and the 29 election, the expectation is the Democrats will win enough seats that the Democrats will be in charge of the House, in which case, if you continue your leadership, then you would be in charge of the entire House, not just the Democrats.
Well, you know, first things first, you have to get them to the majority before anybody votes for a speaker. And if we were to get to the majority, who knows what would happen next? I mean, there'll be a lot of people who would want to be speaker. You know, I'd probably reassess what I'm doing to see if that's something that I would be able to take on. And frankly, whether people would want me to take it on, it's hard to know. But you know, there's never a good time to step down from a position like this. I had originally thought that I would step down at the end of the last election in November of 17. I thought we'd probably win 10 seats. I'd step down at that point and let somebody else take us to the next level. But then we almost won the whole thing, and we had all these recounts, and I really couldn't leave at that point in time. And then we had Medicaid to get through, and I couldn't leave at that time. We had 15 new members that I thought I could help get through their first session, and I just couldn't leave at that time. And then in the summer, we had redistricting, and I felt like I just couldn't leave at that time. And then I had a little bit of a challenge from within my caucus, and I felt like I was not, I'm not going to be pushed out, so I couldn't leave at that time. Now, with everything sort of settled down, I thought it's appropriate for me to leave before this cycle begins, so we have a new leader who can take us through the next campaign cycle.
Again, our guest today, David Toscano, he's the delegate from the 57th District here in the studio with us today, again this year. I will invite you back next year, whether or not you're the leader or not. I'd like you to still come back as a delegate, so please mark that in.
Yeah, I think we've been doing it before I was leader, so that's how long this has been going on.
Probably true. So let's talk about, you mentioned the number of new delegates. Now, I have a friend who works for a company. The company is owned by a woman. The company has a number of employees, a transgender employee, I guess may not be the proper terminology, lesbian employee with a partner, an employee who is a single mother with young kids, and then a number of employees of the more classic, you know, male, married, you know, just the standard you would expect. The company tries to help people get registered to vote, vote absentee if they need to, whatever. They're big on getting people to vote, the importance of voting. And then they have a party after Election Day. Just, you know, hey, you know, wear your I voted patch, et cetera. And there were a couple people who said, I didn't vote. Doesn't matter. It's unimportant. It's all fixed. I couldn't find the time. And I told my friend, you know, you should point out that Newport News district, where it ended up tied in 2017, and they actually had to have a tie. You know, they had to, would they draw a name?
They drew a lot out of a canister. That's what happened.
Right. And tell those folks that somebody in that district said, it's all fixed, I didn't have time, and whether they are for or against transgender, lesbian, want more social services for single mothers with young kids. They let that decision have a severe effect on what the House of Delegates did for the next session.
That's right. If we had had a 50-50 split in the House of Delegates, we would have passed a bill that would have prevented discrimination against LGBTQ people in the workplace. We can't get that passed because we didn't have that one more delegate. We initially were ahead in that district by one vote. And then what happened is the Republicans found a vote the next day, which made the election a tie. If we had that one additional person who came, we would have still won the election. And that would have changed what we could have gotten accomplished in the last session. People focus so much on the federal elections, but states really do matter. You talk about people feeling that the elections are, quote, fixed. The biggest way elections are, quote, fixed is through a redistricting or gerrymandering process by which the majority party, in this case the Republicans, draw lines in a way to make sure their people can be elected to Congress and be elected to the state houses. So if you want to fix that problem, you got to get control of the legislature. And that's what we're trying to do.
So there was a huge turnover in the House of Delegates. What were the total numbers?
Right. When we started the in November of last year, we were 34 members out of a total of 100. And at the end of the night, we had 15. We had flipped 15 seats. We brought in 16 new members. And if just think about the organizational disruption of that. You've got an organization of 34, and overnight, there are 50% more people. That is a very disruptive kind of change. And what we had to do, and what the biggest challenge that I had as leader last time, was to try to incorporate all of these new members, many of whom had no experience in local government or elected positions before, into an institution which is the longest continuing operating Democratic elected institution in the Western world.
The Virginia House of Delegates.
That is a huge challenge, and we got through it. And we got a lot of good things done. But to say that it was easy would be incorrect.
Virginia's David Toscano here, the delegate from the Virginia 57th District here in the studio with us today, Virginia's Sunday morning wake-up call. So you have all these new delegates. You've really changed the House. What was the last year like? What sort of new bills were introduced? Did you get any bills passed that you might not have ever gotten passed before?
Right. Well, let me give you two concrete examples. Well, first, Medicaid expansion. I've been in the studio a lot of years, and every year we've talked about the importance of Medicaid expansion to the future of Commonwealth and the people who don't have health insurance.
Right, that's always, well, next year, we're going to try.
That's true. And we've been trying for 5 years. And one of the reasons it was so important is we were essentially sending our tax dollars to Washington and not bringing them back to help Virginians. So this year, with the election, the Republicans got the message, and they decided, at least a group of them, that they would finally support Medicaid expansion. That would never have happened had we not gotten to 49. That was the power of 49. So with one vote, we changed the lives of 400,000 Virginians. It's probably the most consequential vote that I've ever taken in the General Assembly, that I've ever taken in any form of government. Think about it. 400,000 people get access to health insurance they did not have prior to taking that vote. And that was because of 49 Democrats who stuck together. They all voted for it. And we had, I think, maybe 19 Republicans come with us to do it. And now Medicaid expansion is the law in Virginia, and a lot of people are signing up for that benefit they didn't get. I'll give you another example. This is more personal to me. Dominion Power. People rail against Dominion Power. But Dominion Power has pretty much had its way in the General Assembly for a long time, until this year. This year, Dominion Power put forward a bill that some people thought would have allowed them to collect not once, but twice on their investments in utilities, the so-called double dip. That bill got to the floor, and I took the floor as a leader and said, okay, Dominion says this bill is not a double dip. We say it is a double dip. Here's the amendment that makes sure that it is not a double dip. Vote for this amendment, and we'll make sure that there isn't a double dip. And at that point, 49 Democrats went up on the board in favor of my amendment, and 3 or 4 Republicans went up on the board, and we put the amendment in the bill. It was a huge huge issue at the time and a huge accomplishment for the power of 49. The Republicans were so worried about this politically that they moved to reconsider the vote, and then they all voted for the amendment so that they were all on the record as opposing the double dip. But that would not have happened without the power of 49. Those are two big examples of what occurred in this session that we can be proud of.
15 minutes after the hour here on, it's getting to be wintry here with David Toscano in the room. I don't know if you brought this weather with you, did you? It's December now.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. We're turning into a rainforest in Charlottesville.
David Toscano, delegate from the 57th District in the oldest, how did you describe it? The oldest
consecutive operating Democratic governing body in the Western Hemisphere.
And you're the... You're the Democratic leader. What's the pride behind that?
Oh, boy. There's a lot of pride. Also, I think you may remember, I'm one of the successors to the seat once held by Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, my goodness.
In the House of Delegates. So it's pretty big shoes to fill.
So you give us those two examples. What are some examples that might have never been put forth except for, because... The new delegates that came out that won those elections back in 2017, the news folks said that there were some quite interesting / unusual winners that would have never won before in the previous 5-10 years. I mean, you've got some... Did we not have a woman who was pregnant at the time?
She just had twins.
We had a transgender woman, one in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I can keep picking examples, but this was not a 14-15 group of, and the two of us fall into this category, white men. Which is your standard political group from years past.
Absolutely. And now if you take a look at our caucus, it's incredibly diverse. I think there's maybe 43% women. It's in excess of 30% people of color. We have Latino members, Latina members. We've got the first Vietnamese-American member elected to the General Assembly, first transgender, openly transgender person elected to any General Assembly anywhere in the United States. There was one elected again this year, but the first. So we've got a incredibly diverse and very, very energetic an engaged caucus.
So what kind of bills were introduced this past year that you might have never seen before this diverse group came about?
Well, you know, it's not so much we have seen these bills before because we still represent constituents who have these interests. It's just that they didn't always get elected. So you see some similar bills. Let's take increasing the felony threshold from $200 to $500. Now, that bill has been, that's for larceny. You know, so the threshold for grand larceny in Virginia Code since the 80s has been if you steal something in excess of $200, you can be charged with a felony, which will, if you're convicted, it'll totally ruin your life. So it used to be you could walk, you could walk out with relatively small things. You'd be charged with petty larceny. You'd be convicted of petty larceny. That would go on your record, but it wouldn't be a felony. Over time, you know, the value of goods change, and so there is an argument to just raise the felony threshold too. We haven't been able to do that for years, but now this year we raise the felony threshold to $500. So it will mean then some people who are still guilty of a crime won't be guilty of a felony, which will make a very big difference in how the future of their life unfolds. That wouldn't have happened. That wouldn't have passed without the power of 49.
Again, our guest, David Toscano, here 20 minutes after the hour. So let's take our first break and come back, and we'll talk some specific topics with David. I want to talk about gun control, or gun safety is how the term is now phrased. Hang tight. All right, back with David Toscano. So, David, one of the things, you know, I'm doing my homework, and so we talk about 2017. I would think that many people listening, whether live or at the podcast, SeavillePodcast.com, are aware of August 11th and 12th in Charlottesville. So stepping forward, doing my homework for today's show, I noticed that several of your bill introductions seem to have some relationship to that in terms of gun safety.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they are?
Well, some of the bills that I've introduced are kind of uniquely targeted to Charlottesville, and I'll be back again with some of these bills. One of the bills would have allowed Charlottesville and Albemarle to prohibit certain kinds of weaponry to be carried into a permitted demonstration. And that bill did not pass the General Assembly. I will introduce it again. It will also be a bill that will be promoted by the Attorney General. Beyond that, though, we have much, I would say, larger gun safety bills having to do with universal background checks. A new concept, which is called a risk warrant, which is the concept that by which a judge could declare somebody mentally challenged sufficiently enough that their guns should be secured until they are restored to some form of competency. And but there are other things, too. The notion of maybe we ought not to be permitting people to buy more than one gun a month, the way it used to be in Virginia about 20 years ago. So there are a number of gun safety initiatives that will be pushed in this General Assembly session.
All right, so you're the one bill you mentioned, House Bill 1009, prohibited public carrying of certain firearms with a penalty, adds the city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle to the list of localities in which it is prohibited to carry certain loaded firearms with high-capacity magazines, silencers, folding stock, or long ammunition, or a loaded shotgun with a magazine that will hold more than 7 rounds of the longest ammunition for which it is chambered.
You've got it. You read the whole thing.
Why was that voted against?
Because the NRA and a group called the Virginia Citizens Defense League has a lot of sway in the General Assembly, and they basically dictate to the people on the other side of the aisle that you should not allow this to get to the floor of the House. You should kill it in committee, which, in fact, was done. That's happened to a lot of gun bills. When I first went down there, do you mind if I tell the story?
No, please.
So when I first went down to Richmond, I had a prosecutor. You know, prosecutors generally seem pretty conservative, right? Had a prosecutor come to me with a great idea because they found that there had been a loophole in the protective order statute in Virginia that under protective orders, if you're found guilty of violating, of being subject to a protective order, you couldn't transport or own a gun, but it didn't mean you couldn't have a gun. And they tried to prosecute this case where they walked into this room, this guy had the gun between his legs. He had been a felon, subject to the protective order, and yet they couldn't convict him because he wasn't transporting the gun. He didn't own the gun, but he could possess the gun. And we tried to get that through, and I had all the Commonwealth's attorneys behind me. I had state police behind me. I had all these people behind me, and then the Virginia Civil Citizens Defense League came out and said, "We don't like this bill," and they killed it.
So between the folks who are in support, strongly in support of the Second Amendment, and those who are strongly accepting money from the NRA, you lose.
Yeah, that's what happened. And that's what's been happening in Virginia. And I think that's what's going to happen until we get to 51 in the House of Delegates, Democrats. Now, I can't tell you that every single Democrat would support every single gun safety bill because that's not the case.
Right, because some of them represent people in certain parts of the state that are strongly in support of gun use and gun ownership.
That's right. I mean, we do have a diverse caucus. Not everybody is they don't all represent places like Charlottesville, where there's a very strong gun safety element. But at least you have a better chance of getting something passed if you have those 51 with you.
I mean, that's one of my personal issues, is where the whole group always votes for the same thing.
Yeah, you shouldn't have. And one of the things about our caucus that people don't realize, we almost never bind our caucus to vote together on anything. We feel very strongly you have to convince people of the efficacy of your position. And, the other side does a little more binding of their caucus than we do, but we don't do that. So we try to recognize different points of view.
So you mentioned the one bill that was passed to restrict the firearm rights of people who had mental health problems as teenagers. That was one out of 70,
right?
More than 70 bills that were introduced.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. But I think you'll see the Democrats now have an initiative called the Safe Virginia Initiative. We've gone all over the Commonwealth for the last 6 months, having public hearings, hearing from law enforcement, hearing from students in schools who might be concerned about, you know, some mass shooting that might occur at their schools. We've heard from a lot of people, and as a result, we're going to advance some positions on gun safety that reflect, I think, the broad cross-section of Virginians' view on this issue.
But if the incident in Charlottesville of 2017 couldn't get anything to pass 6 months later, why is anything going to happen now?
Well, it's very difficult to predict what will happen in the next General Assembly session. But if the Democrats take the majority in 2019, then I think you will see more gun safety initiatives.
Okay. One of the other things that seem to be attached to the gun safety was the topic of hate and trying to, I guess, two parts to it. Whether or not it was introducing some bills that had hate somehow tied to it, as well as doing some I don't know if leadership is the proper phrasing or education in terms of, but reducing hate in a variety of ways. Right. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, this is a very difficult issue to resolve because hate exists in people's hearts. You just need to make sure that it can't come out in terms of an action. You know, and that's what King was all about when he talked about nonviolence. He said, look, you know, there are going to always be hate in people's hearts, but we have to have laws in the books that don't allow them to use that hate to really hurt people. So there often are enhanced penalties for crimes that are related to hate. You know, the Matthew Shepard bill, remember Matthew Shepard?
In Wyoming,
I think it was it the 20th anniversary of his death?
Recently. Didn't they move his burial site to Washington, D.C.?
Well, yes, I think that's true. And I can't remember if it was 20 or 25 years, but at the time, and even now, I mean, it's just so heart-wrenching to think of this young man, and any of us who have youngsters of that age, you know, you just worry about them and what would happen if someone who, just because of their hate of somebody who had a certain sexual preference or certain race or religion, took it out on that person. And there's no room for that. So we have to make sure we have laws on the books to prevent it. The question becomes is how exactly you define this hate, and what you have to do to prove it. And that's, you know, that's for the lawyers to kind of figure out. I think we general citizens have to just put a mark in the ground and say, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. People have a right to have their own opinions. But when they start acting on them in a way that hurts people, we can't let that happen.
Again, David Toscano here, the delegate from the 57th District, includes Charlottesville and part of Albemarle. He's also the Democratic leader for the House of Delegates in the state of Virginia. We're talking about gun safety and hate. Let's move on to another topic. I'll let you take over this one because I don't understand this one at all. You mentioned this out front. Tax conformity?
Yeah, and for those people who haven't gotten their second cup or third cup of coffee, you better go get it, because when you start talking about taxes, that's when people's eyes really glaze over. So, Rick, stay with me here a minute. So, everybody, I think, recalls.
But this is money in my pocket.
This is money in your pocket. So you need to be awake and alert about this. But six months ago, the Congress passed the tax cut package for Donald Trump. We know that that tax package was unfair to the low and moderate income people in the country. The wealthy got many more tax breaks. And we know that the Trump tax plan is simply going to exacerbate a huge problem in our country with inequality in wealth and income. No doubt about it. What people didn't realize, however, at the time, is because of the way Trump structured the tax plan, and because Virginians file taxes based largely on the federal tax code and its regulations, some Virginians, some, I don't say everybody, but some Virginians, primarily those in the moderate income ranges, will probably pay more in Virginia taxes this year than they paid last year. And it'll have nothing to do with what we did in Virginia. It'll have everything to do with the way the Trump tax plan was enacted. So, money in your pocket. You might be paying $200 more to Virginia in taxes. You know, on the one hand, that's great for Virginia because it brings more revenue to the state that we can reinvest in things that we need. But is it fair to moderate income people? I don't think so. So we're trying to work on fixing that. So we're looking at little changes we can make in the Virginia regulations that will allow people to keep a little more of their money. And we're going to try to figure out a way we can reinvest some of the money that's coming in so that everybody benefits. So you have some tax relief for middle-income Virginians, that's the relief part. And then the reinvest part is that we're reinvesting in schools, public safety, transportation, things that everyone in Virginia can benefit from. It's called the Reinvest and Relief Program, and we're going to see if we can get that passed.
Is that one of your committees? You're in Rules, Crime, and Justice?
I'm on the Courts Committee.
Courts Committee.
On the Rules Committee. And I'm also on the, they call it Commerce and Labor, which deals with a lot of insurance issues that you may want to talk about, too. It deals with utilities, insurance, commerce, and labor. Minimum wage will come to the Commerce and Labor Committee, too. So, yeah. That bill probably will not go to a committee I'm on. It'll go to the Finance Committee. They do deal with all the tax policy. But usually what Virginia does is simply conform our tax code to the federal code. We usually do that every year. It's non-controversial. This year, it's going to be controversial because once we conform it, people may be paying a little more in Virginia tax. And we want to make sure we can try to address that in some way.
Good grief.
Good grief.
Right. I want to be unhappy that I'm getting more money back on the top so I can slide more back on the bottom.
Yeah, you might get a tax break on the federal return, but then pay more in Virginia taxes.
35 minutes after the hour. David Toscano here with us. I don't know whether that made me happy or unhappy because, you know, last year we, anyway.
And then how do you message that?
Right.
I mean, it's so complicated to try to explain to people. The best you can say is, look, we're trying to do what we can to fix some of the problems that are coming out of Washington, which typically we've been doing anyway. And then we're also going to take whatever windfall we get at the state and reinvest it in a way that'll help people.
And this is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. So everybody listening here is already mad in Washington for the most part anyway.
That's right, yeah.
And the people who are listening who might hear this are already going to say you're just blaming the wrong guy in the beginning.
Well, I just don't want them mad at me. or you.
So what is, let's put this in here, how do folks reach your office when they want to give you praise and thanks for all the great things that you're doing?
Or grief. Yeah, all right. So I have a phone number.
Yeah.
It's 220-1660. That's 220-1660. I have an email. You can go on the legislative website and get that email. Or just for your listeners, I'm giving you my private email. Are you ready?
Oh, my goodness.
Toscano, that's Toscano at bttlaw.com. That's boytomtomlaw.com. So y'all have my private email now. You can send me grief and praise as you see fit.
Yes. Well, good. Thank you so much. Delegate David Toscano here sharing all kinds of information for folks who have needs and praise to pass around for, let's reserve that for actual work and not, or you can send Christmas gifts. Christmas is coming.
As long as they're not more than $50.
Oh.
That's the deal.
Important thing.
You can't do that.
Right. That got previous governors in trouble.
Don't send me any credit cards.
David Toscano here as we talk about things in the news. 2019 coming up. I want you to be thinking about, do you have your plans for what? I went online and there are some people who have already submitted bills for 2019, but I didn't see where you had done that.
Yeah, and the way that works, Rick, is we submit our request for legislation to this group, a nonpartisan part of the government, state government, legislative services, and they draft these bills for us, and then we decide when we want to file them. So the drafting deadline is actually tomorrow, and I've got a bunch of my drafts in, but they haven't come back for me to review, and when I get them back, I'll file them, and as long as we file them before the first day of session, we're fine. We also have a limit this year. We can only file 15 bills, so I have to pick and choose. I've probably got 25 or really good bills that I could see putting in, but I only can put in 15 this year.
Does that include working with others? You know, where sometimes I note that they're submitted with one or two people, or if you submitted versus in the House versus one that you similar or same that you believe is going to be submitted with a colleague who's in the Senate?
Absolutely can do that as well. Now, so here's a concrete example. I'm a big supporter of passing the ERA. If we pass the ERA in Virginia, we'll be the last state we need to get it in the Constitution. This could be a big deal, and I think we have a shot at doing it. We have a strategy for doing it, and that strategy involves having one single patron. So I'm not going to introduce my own ERA bill. We have one single patron. I'm going to sign on that bill because I fully support it. It's a priority of mine, and I think we could have a real good shot at getting it passed this year.
But you may not be the person to submit it as a bill because
right.
You think somebody else or hope or have talked to others who think that that may be one of their 15.
We know that that's going to be one of their 15. Okay. We've already decided that this is going to be our point person. It's Jennifer Carol Foy, an African-American attorney out of Prince William, really good legislator. She's going to be the point for ERA. We're all going to sign on as co-patrons. I'm right in the mix on that, and we're going to get it passed. It's a priority.
All right. Great. David Toscano here with us again this year. Once again, here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, 40 minutes after the hour. Come back for the last 20. All right. I know you didn't go anywhere because we still got other important stuff to talk about with Delegate David Toscano from the 57th District, as well as the House Democratic leader since 2011. Really knowing his stuff. I'm going to turn it over. Is there somebody who's already said, please, please give it to me, or that you've pointed to and said, I think you're my person?
There are five
members of the caucus that are now running for the leadership position, and they all have great qualities, and so we're going to see who wins. And not all five will replace me. Only one.
Only one. Is this sort of like some, wrestling match, chess match?
It's more like a chess match than a wrestling match, because these people are pretty much all friends of each other, and okay. I don't want to make it.
Is it a Mensa game?
They have to get a majority of votes, so it could be several ballots.
It's a popularity match.
Yeah. I don't want to say like high school, but not it. It's popularity and skills. You really have to have a skill set to do this job. And good news is we got a lot of good people who can do it.
I want to talk about preservation and environmental quality.
Sure.
You have this listed on your webpage as important to you. You list climate change as something that's crucial. Right?
Absolutely. So, the newest report, ironically issued out of the Trump executive, shows we have, it's not getting any better. And the only way it's going to get better is we've got to cut down dramatically on carbon emissions going into the atmosphere. For years, I've been offering bills, some of which have passed and some of which haven't, that encourage more renewable energy. A couple of years ago, I had a bill that provided incentives for schools to put solar panels on their rooftops. And a number of schools, including schools around here, now have that there. But we really have to go much broader than that. You think about things like, I use a term, electrify everything. What does that mean? It means electrify cars, try to get natural gas out of the energy scheme, certainly, and coal. And once you electrify everything, you allow the use of wind and solar to take over. And the good news is the technology is being advanced now that makes that competitive. When we solve the challenge of how you store energy, when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, we will turn the utility model totally upside down. We will not need to have the back of natural gas, nuclear. We can go with all renewables. How long is that going to take? 20 years, probably. But you have to take steps along the way to get it done. So in the last General Assembly session, at least there was a bill passed that increased the amount of solar energy that was going to be generated in Virginia. At least there was a bill passed in the last session that put major amounts of money into energy conservation, because, if you save energy, you don't have to generate as much. But the challenges are still there, and we have to do more.
You mentioned the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
And that's a place where we can do more. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which some people call REGI for short, is an initiative arising out of primarily northeastern states, where they join together and they trade carbon emissions through a marketplace. Now, again, this is another one where people have to get a cup of coffee, because it is not easy to explain. But if you trade carbon emissions on the marketplace, you can have the effect of lowering carbon emissions. You also have the effect of raising money that you can then reinvest in your state's energy conservation efforts, or clean air and clean water efforts. So it becomes a win-win situation for climate change. We have not been able to do it yet. We're going to have a bill in again this year to try to do it. I think it will help a lot.
And then, so you yourself, so strongly involved in preservation, environmental concerns, and you mentioned earlier the battle against Dominion, and then anybody listening is concerned about politics, is aware of what's happened with Dominion and the governor.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation where, you know, two members of the Air Board who were scheduled to go off the Air Board in June, I guess maybe at the end of June. Usually what happens when people are scheduled to go off, they get somebody gets appointed to their place right away, or if not, they stay on. Well, these folks never got either reappointed or somebody appointed in their place, and they just stayed on. And now they just last week got asked to leave, and two people were appointed in their place. Those two people are not going to be able to vote on whether to issue the permit on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And it's gotten the environmental community just incensed because they think the, shall we say, the, quote, fix is in. Now, I don't want to comment for the governor because I don't know what was in his mind when he made these appointments. They've said that this was the regular way that things are done. And in some ways, that is true. I mean, people are appointed and reappointed all the time at different times. But the way this was done at this point on an issue that seems so critical around here has raised a lot of people's ire and raised a lot of questions about what's happening with that. But we don't have any, the legislature doesn't have any say in it. This is a totally governor's prerogative.
Right. The concern is that he took two people off the board who were going to vote against the pipeline when he's seems to be supporting the pipeline because he seems to be in some way supporting Dominion.
Yes, exactly. That's what people's perception is. Now, and these new people can't even vote. So now you've got a reduced number of people who are voting, and we learned the other day that one person is going to recuse themselves from the vote. So you might have a very small number of people in the room approving or not approving this permit. You know, I can tell you as well, I mean, we've talked about this pipeline for a long, long time. You know, I'd issued a number of letters requesting certain things be done. I asked Dominion to move it. I asked all kinds of things. And none of the things that I've requested have come to fore. And, you know, the criteria that I've used to judge whether the pipeline makes sense, those criteria are not being met. So I'm very skeptical about this pipeline, and with every single day, my concern seems to grow. We don't have a vote on this thing, but I can express my point of view.
Real quick.
Well, I don't think it's, you know, right now it's not meeting my criteria to be approved, and especially since we're all going to pay for it. There's a defined rate of return on the building of this pipeline, which is going to go into our rate base. I think it's 14 or 15% rate of return automatic to the people who are building the thing, and that's going to cost us more money. I'd rather invest the money in offshore wind if I could, or in utility solar, or distributed power on farms and other creating microgrids in neighborhoods that can essentially wean ourselves from fossil fuel.
David Toscano here with us today, delegate from the 57th District in Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County. He's also still the Democratic leader in the House of Delegates in Virginia.
You know, I can say one more thing about that, Rick. You know, there is no doubt that we cannot wean ourselves from natural gas right now. If we do, we're going to cede control of the energy situation to oil and coal. We can't let that happen. And we can't let what's happened in the northern states where they don't have any pipelines approved, where you get shutdowns to industrial users during times of very cold weather. So there are technical fixes to this. So now the pipeline technology allows you to run gas both ways, and you don't necessarily need a 42-inch new pipeline that'll be destructive of a lot of the landscape to get gas around and make sure that while we're transitioning to solar and wind, that we don't have a fuel that could be reliable.
David, let me ask you about redistricting. Certainly a big issue started in let's see if I can find these are. You wrote a piece on your website about redistricting, and I'm just going to pick three phrases, just factual phrases. In 2011, Republican redistricting plan was designed to disadvantage Democrats. An opinion issued on 2016-2018, the court directed the General Assembly to redraw the districts, and the Republican majority has been unwilling to engage the Democrats in developing a plan.
Yep, I think in some ways this is the biggest issue, before us. Pure and simple, constituents ought to choose their representatives. Representatives ought not choose their constituents. This is pure and simple as that. And what's happened over years, and it's happened, Democrats have done it too in the past, is that people draw lines to protect themselves and protect their parties. Lots of folks don't realize that the redistricting process is a state process. Congress doesn't draw their lines. We draw the lines for Congress. We draw the lines for the state rep seats. And those people who control drawing the lines and those people who control how voting occurs in this country control the country. And that's why the Republicans over the last 20 years have been so good at being able to control the country, even though they probably have a minority of voters who are voting for them nationwide.
The courts have determined that this needs to be done.
The courts have determined that this needs to be done now, and the Republicans in the House continue to delay, in hopes that they can have one more election under districts which the courts here have determined to be unconstitutional. These are districts that were drawn in 2011, and so you've had the 2011, 13, 15, and 17 elections, four elections conducted with unconstitutional maps. And the Republicans simply say, well, let's see if we can get one more out of it to preserve our majority into the next redistricting cycle, which will occur in 2020 and 21. And if they think they can get the majority at that point, they might be able to draw districts to advantage them for another 10 years.
I think, haven't states like Pennsylvania and North Carolina, haven't courts in those states forced committees to get together and quickly redraw with not the legislature or whatever their groups are, but put committees together and said, fine, if they're not going to do it, you draw them for them?
Yeah, in fact, that's kind of what's going on in Virginia now. The courts have said, look, legislature, we'll give you one more shot to do this. And that's what they told us last summer. They gave us until October 30th, and we didn't do it. So now the courts have said, okay, you can't do it, we'll do it. And that's, in fact, what happened in Pennsylvania with the congressional districts. So now Pennsylvania has all new districts, but they were not drawn by the legislature because the courts ruled that the legislature had drawn unconstitutional lines and that the legislature couldn't draw constitutional ones. So the court came in and did the lines. And as you, what happened in Pennsylvania is the Democrats picked up a bunch more seats. And I think what happens in Virginia is if the court draws new lines, there'll be many more districts in Virginia where Democrats will be competitive with Republicans. And that's, of course, what the Republicans don't want. That's what will happen, we think, and that's why they're trying to prevent those new lines from being drawn.
I was looking through my notes. A gentleman in Pennsylvania, Connor Lamb, who won the special election in March, I think from somebody who retired or stepped out, and then had to run again in November because his district had been redrawn, and he was running again against somebody else who was already a candidate. Was already held a seat, but the redrawn district had, forced the two of them together so that they were now both representatives. So
yeah, exactly.
Crazy things like that
happen. And that happens. I mean, if the court had ruled last year, and given us new districts, we might have been running 3 consecutive years in a row. And that would have been very, very challenging. It's not easy to run for office. It takes time and money.
So less than 3 minutes left with our guest, David Toscano, for our yearly visit. Thanks again for coming in. So we touched briefly on the number of bills that you can put forth. Are you willing to share what some of your bills might be? Like last year, I have that you put forth a bill on CBD oil that didn't get passed. It didn't make it all the way through committee. But I guess, again, you've still got...
Well, it got rolled into another bill. So essentially,
my
bill got passed, but it was under another person's name. You know, cardinal rule of politics, you can get a lot done if you don't care who takes the credit. Sometimes you give the credit to somebody else so that the bill can get passed. And but you know, I've got several bills I think are interested locally. I've got another bill to allow localities to be able to remove Confederate monuments if they want. Right now, under state law, it's problematic.
I wonder what problems that caused.
It causes lots of problems because it got defeated last year on a 4-2 vote in the subcommittee. You know, it's a state that still has a lot of reverence for Confederate imagery. But, you know, I'm fully supportive of the ERA bill. I have a bill that will allow people to vote absentee without giving an excuse.
And that was something that I used all our time up for, absentee voting. Virginia is one of the worst at allowing absentee voting.
Virginia is one of the worst in terms of access to the vote, and absentee voting is part of that. If we gave everybody an ability to vote absentee without an excuse, we would probably improve turnout dramatically. In places like Minnesota, Oregon, Washington State, you get turnout numbers in the 70-plus percent. Virginia is in the middle of the pack. Again, those who control the vote control the country.
While you obviously have hopes for that, do you think that, you know, with still being down 51-49, and I'm assuming still being in a minority in a committee,
that's going to be tough this year. But we're going to put it out. It's part of our Virginia promise. We're promising to voters that we're going to fight for things like more access to the ballot box, increasing the minimum wage, trying to reduce inequality. We're going to fight for those things. We're going to lay out our agenda to do those things. If those things don't pass this cycle, elect us, and we will get them passed next year when we have the majority.
David Toscano, 220-1660.
Right, 434.
434-220-1660. Call him up with your praise or your grief. Delegate of the 57th District. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.